Right, here we are.
Yeah.
This is my friend Eric.
Hi.
I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
Bernasek.
Right.
Yeah.
And
Anki? Anka?
Anki, yeah, I prefer Anki.
Anki.
Yes. Eric is from New England.
Well, I'm from the US, yeah.
The US.
Yeah,
lives in Canada. And lives in Canada, like so many people want to.
Yeah, I got in before the the rush. We'll see.
Yes, and I'm from Germany and live in London and have lived in Sweden before. And one thing we have in common, we like to talk shit about Iskon.
Well, more specifically, one thing we have in common is we were both members of Iskon.
Which is the Hare Krishnas.
Right.
In plain English.
And we are no longer, so now we'd like to talk shit about Iskon.
Yes. So, hence, this is called shit about... No, talk shit about Iskon. So, one thing about Eric is that he actually has an academic background. So, I know can speak good. So I'm going to let Eric talk. Yes.
But one thing about me is that I'm not sure what we're going to talk about, so
yeah,
we'll have
nobody
to see.
Knows that. One thing we mentioned before that I thought would be a good starting point. What was that? Now I've nearly forgotten that. The surreptitious nature of the hiding. The non-truthfulness.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that a few times today.
Yes.
I think that's a big thing for both of us.
Yeah. Makes us really, really angry.
Yeah. And, when we were talking about it today, my immediate reaction was just that it's a... Well, I guess we should say what it is first.
Yes.
Iskon has... maybe not recently, maybe it's been going on for a long time, it certainly was going on when I was a member, that they will sort of insinuate themselves into communities where they are not sort of native members, like the yoga community. I guess now there are people that are consultants, or what's the word, not consultant, but like a life coach or...
Yeah.
What were some of the examples that you were thinking of before? University teaching.
University teaching, yeah, especially relevant to me because of reasons, which I might explain, which I might explain later. They're literally full Hare Krishnas, even gurus that teach at actual, very like regular universities and go out as teacher of. Religion or religious studies or comparative religion, it's called, and make disciples, have fully paid up initiated disciples who came there because of this course.
Sort of gradually bringing people into Iskon.
Yes, and then there's the others who go, you know, dressed in suits. It happens in Eastern Europe a lot, where they have suits and they come from Britain. And so automatically have authority and teach people about life and happiness and stuff. And obviously, you know,
gradually make them more and more comfortable with the idea of belonging to a group like Iskon.
Yes.
I think in the interest of full disclosure, I should say that I did this too when I was a devotee. I gave classes at a yoga studio where I worked. I gave classes about the Bhagavad Gita. And I was fairly open about the fact that I was from the Hare Krishna temple that was nearby. I wasn't teaching yoga, like Hatha yoga per se. I was teaching actual Bhagavad Gita classes. But oftentimes now you'll see devotees that just teach yoga classes as a way to sort of network and meet people who might be interested in the philosophy, who might be interested in becoming members of Iskon and gradually bringing them in. To me, certainly there's some overlap there, at least when we're talking about yoga, but the sort of insidious thing about all of that is that not everyone is upfront about what they're doing. That the clear intention is to be in a situation or be in a community or an environment where people may be, as devotees would say, favorable towards ISKCON and its philosophy, and present something maybe related, maybe not related directly to ISKCON and its philosophy, and then just make relationships or make connections and find the people that would most easily be susceptible to becoming devotees. It's a strong word, susceptible. I think...
susceptible is very... It's completely apt. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
That's because that's exactly what the thing is. You create a situation where somebody is open to having their ideas of life changed.
Right,
because
or
that's what you're doing.
Right, in a particular way. Yeah.
So it has to. You have to bring them into something where they feel, you know, safe enough to open their minds, and that very often is, I don't know, has to do with. I don't know.
Well, I think the thing is that. Maybe I'll come back to susceptible, but I think the thing is that, it's based more on a personal relationship than it is actual content. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So you're looking to make a personal connection with someone to make them feel that you're a good person, you're a normal person, which is not to say that devotees aren't necessarily normal, but just that you... I mean, there's so much... The thing that we were talking about before, which is really the point of all this, is that there's so much concealment involved in what they're doing.
Mm.
That instead of coming right out and saying that they belong to this organization, that's a religious organization that has the intentions of making as many members as it possibly can, you're presenting something more close to the mainstream, like more palatable or more easily digestible, as a way of making these connections and then gradually exposing people to something that's a little more, that requires a little bit more commitment or a little more commitment.
Yeah, or at least start them on the path of believing that commitment means a certain thing.
Mm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And commitment then means... a lot of things that are really quite bad for your mental health, if you take it to the extreme, as we both have.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's a really interesting idea, the idea of commitment, because I mean, let's face it, if you sign up for a yoga class, what you're committing to is something very minimal. You agree more or less to show up once a week, and maybe you don't even do that.
And
you
know,
you're doing some physical exercise.
Yes.
Whereas your involvement in a group like ISKCON can, over time, lead to completely replacing your worldview, your circle of friends, your behavior from day to day, your diet, your clothing, so on and so forth.
Yes, your whole understanding of what is good and what is bad basically goes
right. And so the idea is that when you come in contact with these people, they're not saying up front that that's what the end game is. They are just presenting this sort of...
Yes, like everybody, they want to sell you something, so they... yes, I was just thinking of that quote, life is pain. Anybody who says different... selling you something. That's from the Princess Bride, you know. Yes, anyways. No, but they will say eventually that life is pain, but for a reason, because you are bad, because you, it's your fault, it's you're in the material world, because of your material wishes, and you have to get rid of those.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's certainly part of it. But even before that, I think the idea that life is pain and we happen to have the answer...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're wrong. We're right.
Yeah. Exactly.
And not only are we right, but also you will only be happy and fulfilled if you help us spread this message of eternal happiness. So here's the thing. It's sad we didn't actually make it past the temple today.
Okay.
Because what I would have liked to do is an exercise in... see, they have a new book table outside the temple, right?
Mm-hmm.
I saw that the other time I passed by there. I have to check out the place sometimes. So I would like to check how many of the flyers and brochures are on this theme of taking something that's you know, taking a bandwagon, jumping on it.
Hmm.
Not telling you it's the Hare Krishnas, but do you want to be happy, or, you know, sort of anything with life coaching?
Right.
Anything, because the...
Even the book table in front of the temple has this sort of...
Of course, they would have all the things, because they don't... It's, you know, they're not very... They're not actually very good at what they're doing. Because the Hare Krishnas are such a part of life here in London, especially.
Right.
Because of, you know, George Harrison and everything. That if they were good at what they're doing, they'd be much bigger. But now, you know, they're just... You know, those mad people running and singing along Oxford Street sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, if they were good at what they're doing, don't know. It's...
Well, you know, I agree with you. I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think one of the reasons, though, that I wanted to set this idea of susceptibility aside was... I would imagine that most of the people... Even the ones that are sort of engaged in this kind of quote-unquote preaching, that they're not thinking of people in terms of susceptibility or subterfuge or even sort of, well, I don't know, they're probably thinking of gradually bringing people in. The point that I think that I'm trying to make is that they really think that what they're doing is good.
Of course.
Not just good, but what's the word? Sort of beyond reproach. It's not something that will be detrimental to anyone. I'm not sure that many of them really even think of it as dishonest.
No, they definitely don't. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so open about it.
Right. Right. But it is dishonest.
Yes.
I mean, it's clearly dishonest.
Yes.
To appear in a particular environment and to present something and not be upfront about the fact that it's connected to, you know, this very large organization that's basically a religious organization with very specific beliefs, and not just beliefs, but demands and desires for the people that belong to the organization.
Yes, and targets and... Yeah. Yes. Yeah, well, they see it as... giving little drops of nectar
to the poor,
the poor conditioned souls.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's another aspect of its insidiousness, isn't it? I mean, that there are these little slogans that help to frame it in such a way that the true believers who are participating don't. Not just don't, but aren't able to think of it in a negative light.
Yes. And there's a very, again, once you're in there, there's a very clear, because of the culture created by constantly repeating all these little phrases and all these little stories that people tell themselves about what they're doing, that just guarantees that if you get into that environment, that's what you will be doing.
Yeah.
Like a little bee, you will be, you know, collecting the little nectar. And the thing is, I was told that story when, like, back in the 90s, I was a fully paid member, and we were opening a new temple, and we were basically selling cheap oil paintings for a lot of money. And that's obviously not a very spiritual activity, but the story we were told was that, you know, we were Krishna's little bees who would fly around all the, you know, shops and things to get the collect the nectar so we could
to bring it back.
And yes, and it was really, you know, kept us running like crazy until Yeah, until you just couldn't do it anymore.
Well, but there's not much to it, is there? I mean, when you say, you said a not very spiritual activity, I think of, I mean, the philosophy is basically that things that appear material when devotees do them are not material because
exactly.
devotees are doing them.
Yes.
But there's nothing to that. It's just, it's basically saying, well, everybody is doing the same thing, but not us because we're devotees.
Yes, but you're doing it on the behalf of your spiritual master, and because your spiritual master is usually far away, too far away to tell you what to do, in on behalf of him, it will be, of course, and it's always a him, it will be your temple authority who tells you what to do, and then automatically telling, you know, doing what you're told becomes a spiritual activity, which then is a whole different,
you
know?
Yeah, it's a whole different thing, but it's a very big thing. I mean, that maybe the actually spiritualizing thing is that you're doing something that someone else has told you to do.
Yes, of course. Oh my gosh, doing what you what you yourself think?
Exactly.
That's mental speculation.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
You're not doing
God.
Something because it's something you wanted to do. You're doing something because someone else told you to do it. And your desires may overlap with that. Probably not, but I wish I could remember now. I remember once having a conversation about this, that there's actually a hierarchy of these different sort of levels of advancement where, you know, if you're at a very low level of advancement, you're doing something for Krishna that you want to do.
Yeah.
But if you're a little more advanced, you're doing something for Krishna that you don't want to do.
Yeah. They will tell you whatever will make you do what they want you to do. That's exactly. You know? And it's like, see, especially for you, if they can package it philosophically,
mm-hmm.
they will. And then somebody will write a Sanskrit verse, and then it will really go in. Then you can learn it by heart, and then it will be fully spiritual.
Yeah.
They have people like that in Oxford now. They can write Sanskrit
prescriptions.
Songs. Yes. It's very, it's all very, very clever now.